Y जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन भ्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन भ्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, भगवते वासुदेवाय, हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम टू टुडेज़ मॉर्निंग भागवतम रीडिंग। सो वी आर गोइंग टू डिस्कस कैंटो 4 चैप्टर नंबर 25। We are going to read texts 5 and 6, chapters entitled The Characteristics of King Puranjana. Text 5 is on the board. Please repeat. Rajo vacha, na janami mahabhaga, param karma pavidhadhihi, bruhi me vimalam jnanam, येन मुच्येय कर्मभिः। राजौवाच न जानामि महाभाग करम परम कर्मापविद्धधीः, ब्रूहि मे विमलं ज्ञानं येन मुच्येय कर्मभिः। राजौवाच न जानामि महाभाग परम कर्मापविद्धधीः, ब्रूहि मे विमलं ज्ञानं येन मुच्येय कर्मभिः। राज उवाच न जानामि महाभाग परम कर्मापविद्धधीः, బ్రూహి మే విమలం జ్ఞానం యేన ముచ్యేయ కర్మభి. రాజ ఉవాచ నజానామి మహాభాగ పరం కర్మాపవిద్ధధి. బ్రూహి మే విమలం జ్ఞానం యేన ముచ్యేయ కర్మభి. రాజ ఉవాచ నజానామి మహాభాగ పరం కర్మాపవిద్ధధి. బ్రూహి మే విమలం జ్ఞానం యేన ముచ్యేయ కర్మభి. రాజ ఉవాచ నజానామి మహాభాగ పరం కర్మాపవిద్ధధి. బ్రూహి మే విమలం జ్ఞానం యేన ముచ్యేయ కర్మభి. మాతాజీ రాజ ఉవాచ నజానామి మహాభాగ పరం కర్మాపవిద్ధధి. బ్రూహి మే విమలం జ్ఞానం యేన ముచ్యేయ కర్మభి. రాజ ఉవాచ నజానామి మహాభాగ పరం కర్మాపవిద్ధధి. బ్రూహి మే విమలం జ్ఞానం యేన ముచ్యేయ కర్మభి. వట్ వర్డ్ మీనింగ్? రాజ ఉవాచ. ద కింగ్ రిప్లైడ్, నాట్ జానామి, ఐ నో, మహాభాగ, ఓ గ్రేట్ సోల్, పరం, ట్రాన్సెండెంటల్ కర్మ బై ఫ్రూటివ్ యాక్టివిటీస్ అపవిధ బీయింగ్ పియర్స్డ్ ధీ మై ఇంటెలిజెన్స్ బ్రూహి ప్లీజ్ టెల్ మే టు మీ విమలం స్పాట్లెస్ జ్ఞానం నాలెడ్జ్ యేన బై విచ్ ముచ్యేయ ఐ కెన్ గెట్ రిలీఫ్ కర్మభిహి ఫ్రమ్ ద ఫ్రూటివ్ యాక్టివిటీస్. ట్రాన్స్లేషన్ అండ్ పర్పట్ బై హిస్ డివైన్ గ్రేస్ ఏసి భక్తివేదంత స్వామి ప్రభుపాద్. ట్రాన్స్లేషన్: ద కింగ్ రిప్లైడ్, ఓ గ్రేట్ సోల్ నారద, మై ఇంటెలిజెన్స్ ఇస్ ఎంటాంగిల్డ్ ఇన్ ఫ్రూటివ్ యాక్టివిటీస్. Therefore, I do not know the ultimate goal of life. Kindly instruct me in pure knowledge so that I can get out of the entanglement of fruitive activities. Purport. So, we are going to cover text numbers 4, 5 and 6. So, we will read a part of the purport, we'll have a discussion, and then we'll move on, and that's how we'll cover both the purports. So, purport. శ్రీ నరోత్తమ్ దాస్ ఠాకూర్ హ్యాస్ సంగ్, సత్సంగ ఛాడీ కైను అసత విలాస్ తే కారణే లాగియే కర్మ బంధ ఫాస్. యాజ్ లాంగ్ యాజ్ అ పర్సన్ ఇస్ ఎంటాంగిల్డ్ ఇన్ ఫ్రూటివ్ యాక్టివిటీస్ హీ ఈస్ బౌండ్ టు యాక్సెప్ట్ వన్ బాడీ ఆఫ్టర్ అనదర్. దిస్ ఇస్ కాల్డ్ కర్మ బంధ ఫాస్, ఎంటాంగిల్మెంట్ ఇన్ ఫ్రూటివ్ యాక్టివిటీస్. It does not matter whether one is engaged in pious or impious activities, for both are causes for further entanglement in material bodies. By pious activities, one can take birth in a rich family and get a good education and a beautiful body. But this does not mean that the distresses of life are ultimately eliminated. In the Western countries, it is not unusual for one to take birth in a rich aristocratic family. Nor is it unusual for one to have a good education and a very beautiful body. But this does not mean that Westerners are free from the distresses of life. Although at the present moment, the younger generation in Western countries has sufficient education, wealth and beauty, and although there is enough food, clothing and facilities for sense gratification, they are in distress. indeed, they are so distressed that they become hippies and the laws of nature force them to accept a wretched life. Thus, they go about unclean and without shelter or food, and they are forced to sleep in the street. It can be concluded that one cannot become happy by simply performing pious activity. Jai Shri Shada Vandan Bhari Bhagavan Ki Jai Shri Gauranga Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. It is not a fact that those who are born with a silver spoon in their mouth are free from the material miseries of birth, old age, disease and death. The conclusion is that one cannot be happy by simply executing pious or impious activities. Such activities simply cause entanglement and transmigration from one body to another. Narasimha Das Thakur calls this as karma bandha fast. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namam Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vanchakalpa Tarurbhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So in this purport, in this section, we are seeing, in the previous chapter we saw how by the mercy of Lord Shiva, the Prachetas got some wonderful instructions. So the Prachetas are well taken care of. But what about the father of the Prachetas? So Narad Muni was wondering, oh, this is the dynasty of my great devotee Dhruv Maharaj. I instructed previously Dhruva and I gave him, you know, so, in the instructions by which he was able to get direct darshan of the Lord. And in this great dynasty of my devotee, of my disciple, are the Prachetas and Prachinibarhi coming. So he's really concerned about them. So another pure devotee, Lord Shiva, took care of the Prachetas. Now only person left is Prachinibarhi. What to do about him? So Narad Muni personally decides to intervene in his life. We will come back to that point at the end of this lecture. But now we will see what are the specific instructions that Narad Muni is giving to Prachinibarhi. Prachinibarhi, he is famous to have covered the entire planet with kushagras mats. Now what does that mean? Is it like, you know, today people talk about afforestation. You have to plant more trees. If you cover the entire earth with greenery, it is seen as a good pious activity. Or if you dig wells, it is seen as a pious activity. How is covering earth with kushagras a pious activity? So indirectly what it is meant, it says that when a Vedic sacrifice, when a Vedic yajna takes place, people are sitting on a kushagras mat. So literally there were so many yajnas being conducted, it looked as if the whole world was covered with kushagras. So many kushagras mats were there. Right? Like how, you know, we grow tulsi plants. I'm sure Prachinibarhi must be growing kushagras plantations because he has to make so many mats for his kingdom. Right? So Narad Muni was wondering, hey, why are you growing kushagras? You should be growing tulsi instead. So he comes to give him instructions in pure devotional service. Right? So he says, you know, why are you, even yesterday's verse was also quite instructive. He says that, you know, what do you plan to achieve? The goal of life is to reduce misery and experience happiness. And what do you think these fruitive activities that you are engaging in, this kind of Vedic ritualism that you are involved in, what benefit do you think it is going to give? Right? And in that context, Prabhupada also gives a very heavy purport here as well. How it is all one karma bandha fast. What does fast mean? a noose, fasi. When a prisoner is hung by the noose, right? The noose is very, if you see how a prisoner is, when capital punishment is awarded, right? So literally, they are in a very helpless state. They are in an extreme state of misery. They want to live, they want to survive, but there is nothing that they can do. Because their hands and feet are tied and they are literally dangling there, just trying to hold on to the life breath with whatever means possible. So which means that complete helpless state, which is eventually leading to one's ultimate end, is what is symbolic of this fast, this noose. Literally, that is what karma bandha fast, the noose of karmic reactions, are going to hang one, right? So why is, if indeed it is such a big karma bandha fast, then why is it that the Vedic philosophy is talking about this kind of, a methodology? In fact, it is even seen as a spiritual process. There's a whole school of thought centered around this system, right? So many times, you know, especially as practicing devotees, we like to dismiss other philosophies as peanuts. So today we will try to make an attempt to see why it is not peanuts. There is actually a lot of depth involved even in the karma philosophy. Especially in the karma mimamsaka, the Vedic ritualism is also a very, very deep philosophy. Right? In fact, the word mimamsa means analysis. Right? What are you trying to analyze? The Vedas themselves. So while we know Vedanta tries to analyze the Vedas based on the metaphysics, the philosophy, Karma Mimamsa tries to analyze the same Vedas through mechanistic principles, through rituals, right? So, and even classically in the Vedic path also, the Vedanta was more oriented towards the sannyasis, the aranyakas, the sannyasis, those who go live in the forest. But the Karma Mimamsa principles were mainly meant for householders. And if you see from general statistics, majority of the population are householders, right? And that's why you'll see across the Vedic fold, the Karma Mimamsa principles were so commonly followed. And sometimes we just dismiss off Karma Mimamsa saying that, oh, it is just some kind of a polytheistic faith where people like to adore different forms of divinity, different devata, devis and devatas, and just to fulfill one's desires. Karma Mimamsa philosophy is only for it's a kind of a Vedic ritualism that is geared towards fulfilling the selfish desires. Well, that's not the right and complete understanding. It eventually got degraded into that, but actually there's a very, very deep philosophical and scientific rationale behind the entire Karma Mimamsa philosophy. Because it's a whole science of understanding Vedic Dharma based on karma. Because the ultimate goal is to understand the Vedas itself. It's a mimamsa, it's an analytical process. It's an analysis on the Vedas. Right? In fact, one of the important principles of Karma Mimamsa is following a lifestyle of Karma Yoga. So do you think Karma Yoga is bad? How many of you say Karma Yoga is bad? Raise your hand. So this is a trick in public speaking. If you want people to agree with you, ask them the question, right? Because most people don't want to raise their hand. So if you want to get your whichever thing point you want to prove, right? So make the opposite of that and ask a question. Nobody will raise a hand. That way everybody is agreeing with you. But seriously, do you think Karma Mimamsa is good? If you think it's good, raise your hand. Or Karma Yoga is good, raise your hand. Right? Yeah, it's good, right? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about it. So there has to be some utility to it. In fact, in the beginning of this chapter, in the first verse commentary, Vishnu Chakra Thakur, he writes that in this chapter, starting from this chapter, Narada begins awakening King Prachini Barhi, who's absorbed in Karma Yoga. So he was absorbed, not just doing some time pass in Karma Yoga. He was completely absorbed, completely focused and dedicated to the process of Karma Yoga. Right? And using the story of Puranjan, he's going to tee that. So definitely, there is some, You know, he's not doing, he's not involving in karma kanda. That's a point I'm trying to make. He was involved in karma yoga. And he's such a scholarly king. Do you think the wise sages and the priests and the brahmanas in his kingdom would have encouraged the king in engaging in some, useless karmakanda activity? He was definitely involved in something very spiritual, and yet Narad Muni wanted to give him something deeper, right? So let's try to understand, first of all, how in general the Vedas are offering this concept of karma mimamsa, and how sometimes, why is it such a powerful siddhanta, right? So to understand this, first we need to understand the difference between rights and responsibilities. Today the whole world is talking about rights. We are become a society of right seekers, right? Both the left and right are seeking their rights, right? But everybody is just centered about, you know, I want my rights, animal rights, women rights, children rights, human rights, non-human rights, male rights, all the whatever, you know, it's all about a society of rights. But we fail to understand that when you are demanding fulfillment of your rights, there has to be some accompanying responsibility, some sense of duty also. Like you may say, I have right to food. But your right to food can only be fulfilled with somebody else's responsibility to cook. Right? If the person who is taking the responsibility of cooking is not cooking, then your right to food cannot be fulfilled. So we have to understand that we live in this very strong integrated world where your rights are coming because of fulfillment of somebody else's responsibilities, and likewise, you have to fulfill some responsibilities to fulfill somebody else's rights. That is the law of the universe. So not just this world, not just this manifest world, but the entire universe is designed based on certain principles of rights and responsibilities, which maintains an order. If this order is not there, the entire universe will be in a state of chaos. That cosmic order, maintaining this very fine fabric of balance in this universe, is called as ritam. And that ritam, it manifests practically in our life as certain principles of dharma. The entire karma philosophy is centered around this ritam and dharma. That it is impelling one to follow a life of responsibility. Right? That's why I'm saying karma mimamsa is not about just fulfilling your material desires by doing Devi Devata Puja. That's a very watered down understanding. It's actually a very strong philosophical process of inspiring people to live a life of responsibility. And this is something that even Bhagavad Gita talks about, you know, in third chapter, text number 10, Krishna says how in the beginning of creation, the Lord sent all creatures, people and demigods along with the principle of yajna. And he said, be thou happy by this yajna process, because by its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. You know, two things, living happily and achieving liberation. What did Narad Muni say in the previous verse? What is the goal of life? Living happy and freedom from misery. Freedom from misery is liberation. So you can see how Narada's words are completely in line with Krishna's words. And how is this system created? The system of fulfillment of one's dharma and ritam. The devatas, being pleased by sacrifice, will also please you. And thus by cooperation between humans and devatas, prosperity will reign for all. Right? And as you are performing your different Vedic rituals, devatas, enjoying the fruits of your activities, will bestow upon you certain blessings. And that is how you are doing your responsibilities, and thereby the devatas will fulfill their responsibility and give you your rights. What is your right? You have a right for rains. You have a right for good air. You have a right for peace of mind. All of these are arranged by the different devatas. So the whole idea is these Vedic rituals are not meant for mere appeasement of the devatas. In fact, a karma mimamsaka does not engage in these Vedic rituals just to enjoy, but rather because the Vedas have given them as an injunction. The Vedas enjoin one to follow this. That is the motivation. The nishta of a karma mimamsaka does not come from the desire to enjoy, but it comes out of a sense of responsibility and a respect for the Vedas, that look, the Vedas are asking me to live a responsible life of yajna. Therefore, I will do this yajna. Right? And to substantiate this, the karma mimamsakas, they create their own system of hermeneutics. How do you understand Vedas? The signs of... So, according to the karma mimamsakas hermeneutics, the Vedas mainly give three kinds of statements. The first set of statements are the vidhis. Vidhis are injunctions. You have to do this kind of statements. The second are nishedas, prohibitions. Don't do this. And the third set of statements are stutis, prayers, very devotional prayers. And this is where Vedanta differs from the karma mimamsakas. The karma mimamsakas say the vidhis are most important. The stutis, you know, they are subjective. You have to be a little careful. You know, you have to add a pinch of salt, because sometimes the stutis, they tend to over-glorify. So don't take them so seriously. Even the stuti says, oh, just by surrendering to your Lord, just by chanting one holy name, mountains and mountains of sins across past lifetimes will be removed. That is just, you know, an extra glorification. It's an exaggeration, but it really doesn't happen like that. Right? That is their way of interpreting. Right, but the vidhis, do this, 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 you know, stay away from sense gratification. See, that's a vidhi that you should follow. Follow a life of yajna. In fact, if you see, even in the Upanishads also, the Upanishads, so-called Upanishads, which are meant for the, you know, the renounced order, the sannyasis who are living in the forest, even they, like Taittiriya Upanishad, it says that how if one gives up yajna, the, you know, rigya, literal fire ritual, If one gives that up, then one has lost the purpose of life. That is how much the vidhis have been emphasized, right? And all of this. So basically, this sense of duty is what that drives a karma mimamsaka. So understand, they are not mundane sense gratifiers here, as we sometimes tend to. And what is the worldview that they carry? Why should I do this duty? The worldview that they carry is that how the entire universe is one big, gigantic, macrocosmic organism. They like to call it as a Mahapurusha, the cosmic deity. And the devatas are the angas of this Mahapurusha, kind of the Virata Purusha understanding that we have in Vedanta. So this Mahapurusha, basically there is this one all-pervading consciousness that manifests at various stages as these different devatas and the different deities that we see, right? That is the worldview that they carry, right? And to access these devatas and these different manifestations of different stages of divinity, how do you access them? You access them through sound. Sound, the science of sound has been very nicely elaborated in the karma mimamsaka philosophies. Some of you might have heard about this four levels of sound, Vaikari, Madhyama, Pashyanti, Para. It's a concept that has been elaborated by the karma mimamsakas, right? And the understanding is very, very interesting, because they say that if you look at everything, like even right now I'm speaking some words. So there's a physical manifestation happening right now, right? In the form of words. But even before that physical manifestation took place, in my mind, I created a structure to those words. Only when the mind created a structure to those words, the external words can come out. You know, otherwise I'll only be blabbing some nonsense. Right? So which means before the physical manifestation took place, there was a subtle manifestation. But if you actually analyze, go one layer deeper, even before the mental manifestation of the words took place, all these words existed as a concept in my head, in my intellectual space. You see, there it is almost like, you know, like one seed. That one seed, it expanded into a subtle manifestation in my mind, and that subtle manifestation came out as gross manifestation in the form of words, right? So you see, but then the Karmamsa philosophy explains, no, there is one more layer, even beyond that, that seed of concept, that idea, even beyond that idea is an inspiration. And that inspiration has to come from a spiritual source. That is at para stage. So the para is that inspiration that transforms into abstract concept at the Pashyanti stage, and that transforms into a clear concept, you know, in the Madhyama stage and the mental stage, and which finally manifests as gross words, right? That's when physical manifestation takes place and the physical stage or the Vaikari stage. So likewise, not just our day-to-day activities or words, even the universe has come about that way. It is the Supreme Lord who created through his para sound, from our Gaudiya Vaishnava understanding, that para sound is nothing but the breathing of Mahavishnu, the sound, his exhalation. That his exhalation, in some scriptures it is also referred to as Omkara. The Omkara is literally the breathing of Mahavishnu. And that Omkara is that para sound, pranava mantra, which is the seed of this creation. And that pranava mantra, when it entered into the ears of Brahmaji, Brahmaji got the concept. Oh, this is how creation is supposed to be. Then the Lord did para creation, Brahmaji did Pashyanti creation. And when Brahmaji does the Pashyanti creation, then the Madhyama creation is done by the Devatas. So Brahma empowers it. Brahma never personally intervenes. The Prajapatis and Devatas who do that, right? That was the problem. When he saw that the creation was not happening fast, the Devata, the Prajapatis were not creating the world, you know, or populating the world sufficiently fast, Brahmaji got impatient. Instead of restricting to his dharma of a Vaikari creation, he entered into the Madhyama creation. So using Vak Shakti, he used his own Vak Shakti to populate the universe even faster. And because he intervened, that was an adharmic activity. So the whole Vak episode is explained like this by Sridhar Swami. Right? So then when you and I do it, when you and I create buildings, we do the Vaikari creation, the physical creation that happens, right? So you see how even the universe is expanding from the subtle to the physical. And likewise, when you want to access these devatas also and these cosmic administrators, you have to access them through these mantras. And that's why the whole concept of connecting to different forms of divinity through mantras is a very, very important element of Karma Mamsaka. In fact, for them, the deity is a gross manifestation of the mantra, and the mantra is a subtle manifestation of the deity. Right? Today, we don't see that a lot in India. Perhaps if you've ever seen a Vedic yajna, before a yajna is established, you actually invoke the presence of certain devatas in Vedic, in a Karmakanda ritual, or in our, like in a Vaishnava ritual, we invoke the presence of different forms of the Lord, right? The different direction devatas, you know, Agni, Indra, Vayu, etc. You invoke their presence. Even in fact, the Yajna Purusha himself, you know, is a deity, right? That's why you don't recite the mantras the way you want. Even though we are following the bhakti tradition where intention is more important than action, but when you are doing a yajna, intentions don't work. Your actions have to be pure. The yajna sthali should be pure, the ingredients should be pure, the mantra recitation should be pure, right? So you cannot give that excuse that, oh, we are devotees. So I remember Radha Dyuti Prabhu, when he was training our Jadu Thakur Prabhu, you know, Prabhu, something, he did some mistake, and Prabhu was so heavy on him. He said, you know, sometimes we give an excuse, right? Krishna, he's Bhavagrahi. Krishna is Bhavagrahi, but not the Yajna Devata, Yajna Purusha. He is not Bhavagrahi. He will burn you if you, right? So we have to be very, very pakka about this, these things. Eh? That's why in the So the whole idea is you need to concentrate. By concentration of this mantra power, one manifests the deity, right? Again, in India, we don't see this. I was explaining many years ago, I had gone to Bali. And Bali is a country where a lot of influence from India has gone during the, you know, medieval time. And even though our later on Shankara, Ramanuja, Madhva, or when they have literally cleaned up the Indian system of all the Karma Mamsa aspect and established Vedanta and Bhakti traditions, those Karma Mamsa rituals are still there in Bali. So when I went there, I was amazed to see very, very beautiful architecture, everything. And I said, wow, there must be like a beautiful, if the outer building is so beautiful, then the deity must be even more beautiful. And in Bali, the carpentry work is very good. They carve some beautiful wood carpentry there. So I was really inspired to go, and I went inside. I saw empty altar. I asked the local people, where's the deity? He said, we don't have deities, but our pujari, through mantras, they invoke the presence of a deity, of the devata, do the puja, and then they do avahanam. Avahanam and avarohanam, right? It's called. Avahanam is inviting the deity, and avarohanam is you say thank you very much. So even in yagya also we do that, right? We invite the Lord and then we say thank you to the Lord and we release him like that. So that's the system. You still see there. In India, we don't see that so much. There, all their temples are. In fact, outside every home, you will see like how we have dvajastambhas, garudastambhas in our temples. Outside every home, there's a pillar and one, you know, little altar kind of structure with a seat in it, with an asan, but asan is empty. That you'll see in out of every house, and very beautifully they decorate there in every house. So for them, their understanding is that through mantras, I invoke the presence of the deity and I worship them. And so another example that Jaimini gives in the Karma Mamsa, he says that on a very moist day, like rainy day like today, the humidity may be very high, but still you can't drink. If you need to quench your thirst, you need to go take the condensed form of that moisture in the form of water in a glass, and then you need to drink. So likewise, even though that supreme consciousness is there everywhere, the rhythm is there everywhere, but still, through concentrating that consciousness through mantras, you invoke the presence of the deity, and that is how you worship like that. So then, wow, so far, how many of you got impressed with the depth of their philosophy? Right? I'm sure you all are. Yes? So now, the question comes, and why is it a bondage? So that Prabhupada writes in the second part of the purport. King Prachini Parishad admitted this fact and frankly asked Narad Muni how he could get out of this karma bandha fast, entanglement in fruitive activities. This is actually the stage of knowledge indicated in the first verse of Vedanta Sutra, Athato Brahma Jigyasa. When one actually reaches the platform of frustration in an attempt to discharge karma bandha fas, he inquires about the real value of life. This is called Brahma Jigyasa. In order to inquire about the ultimate goal of life, the Vedas enjoin Tad Vigyanartham Sa Gurum Eva Abhigachet. In order to understand the transcendental science, one must approach a bona fide spiritual master. King Prachini Parishad found the best spiritual master, Narad Muni, and he therefore asked him about the knowledge by which one can get out of the entanglement of karma bandha fas, fruitive activities. This is the first, the actual business of human life. Jivasya tattva jigyasa nartho yas cheha karma bihi. As stated in the second chapter of first canto Srimad Bhagavatam, a human being's only business is inquiring from a bona fide spiritual master about extrication from the entanglement of karma bandha fas. And this is the problem with the Karma Mamsa philosophers. Jaimini explains that karma is superior to jnana. Right? This is the worldview of the Karma Mamsakas. Why? Because his argument is, look, vidya and karma are two separate things, and vidya is ultimately subordinate to karma. Because what does, if you see all the Vedas are talking about worshipping Lord Vishnu. Right? There are so many injunctions that talk about performing yajna to Vishnu, as we read from third. Krishna is saying one should perform yajna to Lord Vishnu. Right? Nowhere Krishna is, of course, later on he will, but You know, but majority of the instructions are talking about karma. Even the vidya about the supreme knowledge of the absolute also has to be accompanied by worship. It's a karma. It's an act of, it's a physical action. So karma is never to be given up. In fact, believe it or not, this is how Jaimini writes in his Karma Mamsa commentary. He says, sannyas is meant for the feeble, blind and crippled who cannot perform karmas. Otherwise, even the great sannyasis, the great renounced people also would every day do yajnas. Yajna dana tapa should never be given up. Right? Yajna should never be given up. Like that. There is a very nice quotation in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. It talks about what happens at the time of death. So there, it says that how the eyes become united with the dying person. And the person says, I cannot see. The nose becomes united with the dying person and he says, I cannot smell. The tongue becomes united with the dying person and says, I cannot taste. Then next he says, I cannot speak. Then I cannot hear. So hearing is the last sense that goes away. Then all his tanmatras also go away. Then he says, I do not know. The intellect of the dying person says, I do not know. Then the top of the heart begins to glow. By the light, the Atma leaves through the eye, head or other place. The prana follows a departing jiva. All the senses follow the departing prana. And the jiva has awareness. He departs with knowledge of his past. His knowledge and karma. Tam vidya karmani saman varabhyet pura pragyacha. Vidya and karma, they accompany the soul to its next destination. So he quotes this and saying, look, not just your vidya, actually it is karma is also accompanying. Therefore, you should never give up karma. In fact, what does Aishopanishad say? Kurvan evehe karmani jijivichek shatam samaha. For hundreds of years, you can continue your karma. Therefore, karma and jnana should always be accompanying each other. You can never give up karma. Convinced? Right? So, then Vyasa, in the Vedanta Sutra, he explains that, look, he gives a very beautiful example. It's a cow and goat example, but we'll give a different example. Imagine a person gets a package, a gift, mobile phone. And he says, what's the cost of this mobile phone? He says, 10,000 rupees. He opens the box. He says, there's a mobile phone and a cover. He says, wow, I got 5,000 rupees phone and 5,000 rupees cover. Is that an intelligent statement to say? Just because the phone and cover total costs 10,000 rupees, that does not mean both are 5,000 rupees each. The phone is 9,900 rupees, the cover is 100 rupees. So when karma and jnana are sometimes put together on the same pedestal, it does not mean both are of equal value. So he gives the example of cow and goat. If you sell cow and goat for 100 coins, the cow may be 90 coins and the goat may be 10 coins. So Vyasa gives this example. So like that. So he says, then what about those? For whom are the Vedic instructions saying one should never give karma? So like how in the yoga process we have yoga arudha and yoga aruruksu. In this process you have a Brahma Nishta and a Brahma Vit. Brahma Nishta means one who has developed strong conviction about these Vedic, about Vedas. But a Brahmavit is one who has realized the Vedas, who has realized the absolute truth. So a Brahma Nishta cannot give up yajnas. But a Brahmavit has transcended karma. Such a person can give up karma like that. So that is how Vyasa, he tries to find the flaw, he gives a critique of this Karma Mamsa philosophy, and thereby he establishes that, look, if you do not understand this, that the role of vidya, the role that jnana plays, and in fact, the whole point of karma is to purify one's consciousness. That sense of living a life based on responsibility purifies your consciousness. And in that purified state, we can actually understand the Vedic wisdom. That is the only purpose of jnana. And once that purification is achieved, then karma has no role to play. Right? It's like that. So then, after, and otherwise it becomes a pass. It becomes a noose around you. Then in the next verse, text number 6, griheshu kuta dharmeshu putra dara dharanarthadihi na param vindyate mudho brahmayan samsara vartmashu. Those who are interested only in the so-called beautiful life, namely remaining as a householder entangled by sons and a wife and searching after wealth, think that such things are life's ultimate goal. Such people simply wander in a different type of body throughout this material existence without finding the ultimate goal of life. So this is the karma bandha phase that happens. If the focus is only on karma, 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 not understanding the goal of karma is purification, through that purification you achieve higher stages of spiritual realization, then one will only be entangled in a worldly life, mainly characterized by living a beautiful, happy life, as so Prabhupada elaborates in the purport. Those who are too much attached to family life, which consists of entanglement with wife, children, wealth and home, are engaged in kuta dharma, pseudo duties. Prahlad Maharaj has likened these pseudo occupational duties to a dark well, andhakupam. Prahlad has purposefully spoken of this dark well because if one falls into this well, he will die. He may cry for help, but no one will hear him or come to rescue him. The words Brahmayam Sahamasra Vartmasu are significant. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very clearly explains, Brahmane Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeeva. All living entities are wandering in different types of bodies throughout different planets. And if in the course of their wanderings, they come in contact with a devotee by the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their lives become successful. Even though King Prachini Bari was engaged in fruitive activity, the great sage Narada appeared before him. The king was very fortunate to be able to associate with Narada, who enlightened him in spiritual knowledge. It is a duty of all saintly persons to follow in the footsteps of Narada Muni and travel all over the world to every country and village just to instruct illusioned persons about the goal of life and to save them from the entanglement of karma bandha, fruitive activities. You should all ask air tickets to Gaurang Darshan Prabhu and the management team. Prabhupada instructing all of you to travel all over the world, right? So, but what is Prabhupada mainly highlighting here? Narada, he now gives, or he's going to give eventually as a conclusion, the Vedantic worldview. The Karma Mamsa's worldview is that how the Lord created this rhythm, the order in this universe, which is manifesting as dharma, and this dharma which is accessed by invoking the devakatas through mantras, this system is the cause of result. Or in other words, if I follow dharma, results will come. Right? Is it true? How many of you agree with this? Dharma, dharmo rakshati rakshitaha. If you heard that statement, if you Mahabharata's famous statement, if you protect dharma, dharma will protect you. Right? Therefore, the cause of all your good results in your life is dharma. Dharma is empowering you to give the results. How many of you agree with this? Raise your hand. Sorry? Partially. Right? So, this is where again Vyasa in Vedanta Sutra, he presents a critique on this. If your karma, which is in line with your dharma of course, is alone giving results, by the time the result comes, your activity is over. How can something non-existing give you a manifest result? I repeat, you did something in your last life, for example. And you are saying, now I am experiencing because I did something great in my last life. So if that last life activity is indeed the cause of result in this life, that activity was gone. So who is monitoring? When you say the cause has to be in control. How can a non-existing controller award you a result in this life? Right? So clearly, there has to be someone or something who is still existing, monitoring this whole system. Right? And that is karmana daiva netrena. So the concept of daiva, the concept of the Supreme Lord, even though he has created a system of karma, karma is not giving you results. It is daiva who is giving you results. Right? ద్రవ్యం కర్మచ కాలశ్చ స్వభావో జీవ ఏవే చ యత్ అనుగ్రహాతః సంతి న సంతి యత్ ఉపేక్షయా. సో దిస్ సెకండ్ క్యాంటో 10 చాప్టర్ టెక్స్ట్ నెంబర్ 12, ఇట్ సేస్ ద్రవ్యం, ఫిజికల్ ఎలిమెంట్స్ ఆర్ దేర్, యునో దట్ ఈస్ అ మోడర్న్ సైంటిఫిక్ అండర్స్టాండింగ్ సేస్ దట్ ultimately results are coming. Why is this laptop existing? Because all the elements are there. That is a modern materialistic worldview. The karma says karma is a cause of manifestation of this laptop, or kala, time is the cause, right? But actually all these three are existing, or some may say even the swabhava of the jiva is the cause of action. But actually all of these, one should definitely know that material ingredients, dravyam, activities, karma, time and modes, and the living entities who are meant to enjoy them, all exist because yat anugrahataha. They only exist by the Lord's yad, unto that Lord's mercy alone. And as soon as he does not care for them, everything becomes non-existent. If the Lord doesn't sanction, no results will manifest. No matter how good your karma may be, how strong your dravya may be, how favorably your time is according to astrology, if Lord does not sanction something, things will not manifest. On the contrary, if the Lord does sanction, even if there is no dravya, karma, kala, things will manifest. So he has the ultimate veto power over everything. This is the world, right worldview. And that is why when Krishna also says, yo yo yamam tanun bhaktam, so those verses are actually Krishna is countering so understand, Krishna is presenting what? The Vedanta philosophy. And Vedanta by default is also presenting an antithesis to the other systems of philosophy. So by those verses, Krishna says that even when one worships a devata, I actually make their faith steady. And the results they are getting, I am indirectly giving them through the channel of the devatas. Right? So that's why in the 9th chapter, Krishna says, oh, even if you are attached to doing yajna, everything in yajna is Krishna. Aham kartur, aham yajna, swadha aham, aham aushadam, mantro aham, aham evajam, aham agnir, aham hutam. I am kartur, the karta. Sivananda Prabhu is not the karta. Lord is the karta. Aham yajna, that fire sacrifice is not yajna. Krishna is at yajna. Swadha aham. Swadha is oblation. You are not offering ghee. It is ultimately Krishna's energy that you are offering into it. Aushadi, the herbs, is also Krishna. Mantra, aham mantra, I am that mantra. The melted butter, ajyam, is also Krishna. Aham agnihi, aham hutam. Right? So this is the understanding. This is the proper Vedantic understanding. So this is the concept of simultaneous oneness and difference. So yes, at one level, we are not professing that ultimately everything is Krishna. While Krishna is in everything, everything is not Krishna. Right? So, but the connection of Krishna's energies in everything is there, and ultimately, Krishna is ultimate sanctioner. And therefore, connecting to this process of Krishna through a devotional way is what Narad Muni inspiring Prachini Barhi. In that's what we will see. And I'd like to end with one very nice instruction. Narad Muni himself, he writes that how to achieve this bhakti. As Prabhupada also elaborated in the purport, that there are different ways, right, of achieving bhakti. So one level he says that by sangatyagat and lokatyagat, by giving up bad association, giving up worldliness, one will achieve bhakti. But then he says, but actually, you know, mukhyastu, he says that mainly, mukhyastu mahat kripaiva bhagavat kripa leshadva. Mainly, bhakti develops by mercy of great souls, by mahat kripa. Or by leshamata bhagavat kripa, by a tiny drop of Lord's mercy. And then how do you get Lord's mercy? Lord's mercy manifests in the form of the association of great souls. He says that as getting association of great souls is extremely difficult. Mahat sangastu durlabho. Getting mahat sangha is extremely durlabh. But that durlabh mahat sangha labhyate api tat kripaiva. If the Lord's kripa is there, you will get association of devotees. And by mahat kripa, in that association, by pleasing the devotees, one gets their kripa, and through that mahat kripa, one will be able to achieve bhakti, and that is how one can further enhance their spiritual journey. All right, so these are a few thoughts which I wanted to share. Anybody has any quick questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
For four levels of creation, Pashyanti, Vaikari, Madhyama, Pashyanti, Para. So when we hear that Prabhupada was giving classes, disciples were sitting, Prabhupada was giving class in Hindi, and he still asked his disciples to sit. So what is it that they were getting? They were getting the nourishment in the form of a para sound?
Yes. So if you remember the purport to the Hare Krishna mantra, Prabhupada says this transcendental vibration will penetrate beyond the physical, mental, intellectual layers and affects directly at the soul. Affects at the soul direct. That's the statement Prabhupada makes. What does it mean? That spiritual sounds are beyond even your mental intellectual layers. Right? That is the potency of the para sound. Yeah.
And Prabhuji, just one more question. So when we get that inspiration at the level of para sound, and then comes the next level of creation, which is the Pashyanti. So is there a connection between that Pashyanti and the philosophical speculation that's what we talk about? That once we have heard something, that we have to do some contemplation, and then we have a concept.
Okay.
We explain the concept, that is at the Madhyama level, but to develop that concept based on the inspiration.
Right. So when Prabhupada says, you know, you should not listen to commentaries of mental speculators. So what it means is, see, first of all, let's discuss how bhakti works. Karma works by giving you purification. Jnana works by giving you intellectual conviction. Say, yoga works by, you know, your subtle senses start becoming very, very strong, your mind becomes still, right? That is how it works. But if you ask how bhakti works, do you all recall the day when you actually became a devotee? Who recalls that exact specific moment that you said, yes, from today, I am a devotee of Krishna? Or whatever, I decided to become a devotee or whatever. If you see, it's a very, very sublime transformation which happens. Because bhakti happened, it manifests beyond our logical domain. So it happens by creating inner conviction. When you say Mahat Kripa, what Mahat Kripa gives you is inner conviction. And conviction is beyond logic. Like right now, we are also very convinced about sense gratification, which is beyond logic. Logic says don't indulge in sense gratification, but we are fully convinced about sense gratification, right? So conviction is a state beyond logic. It operates from the state of your heart, your consciousness, which is heart is basically the embodiment of your consciousness. So it happens. So what bhakti does is it operates at that level, and when we hear these statements, teachings of great acharyas, or when you engage in devotional service, it is that conviction space that manifests, and that is how the whole transformation takes place in the life of a devotee, right? So remind me a very specific part that you mentioned that inspired me to speak.
My my understanding is devotees are encouraged to do philosophical speculation.
So then, when our acharyas write commentaries, they are not taking a bottom-up approach of, okay, here are A, B, C, D concepts, let me put them together and create a new concept. That is mental speculation mental speculation. But when our acharyas write commentaries, first they work on creating an inner conviction, and inspired by that conviction, they translate it into an ideation and then thoughts and then words. That is the difference. So therefore, when Prabhupada says, commentaries of our acharyas are also directly coming from the Supreme Lord, it means that their source, the bija, is coming from a spiritual inspiration. And that's why we read our commentaries of our acharyas and not the bottom-up approach of the mental speculators who, you know, sometimes randomly their ideas may click, they may match, but we don't take it for their full face value. Only if their commentaries are also, or their expressions are in line with our acharya's commentaries, we take it as pramanik. That's the main difference, yeah. Haribol. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you once again for your very patient listening. Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavat Purana ki jai. Anantakoti Vaishnavinda ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.